Mikey, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. 7 o'clock, we're here in studios, and it's Friday. We made it. 1-800-222-5222. sam@samnation.com is the email. And we are busy making radio great again. Yes, I'll do it now. I'll get to it right now and out of the way. Get into the Steve Bannon story and tell you what the real scoop is here. But before I do that, we want to acknowledge Joel working the desk here. Joel is a longtime listener, first-time producer, filling in for the famous Robbie, who is, I believe, chasing the eclipse. So he's up. He's somewhere up north, and he's already found himself a campsite, apparently. And he's that's it. They're getting ready 2 days in advance. It's going to be on Monday, and it's going to cross the U.S. And apparently, if you're in the right spot, you can see the stars in the middle of the day. So we will be without producer Robbie for the next few days. But at any rate, welcome, Joel, and let's do a show. Steve Bannon let go today from the White House. He was fired. Okay, none of these stories here about him having a discussion with Trump or this being any kind of a mutual decision. I mean, he was absolutely 100% let go, and that's now confirmed by multiple sources. And within 3 hours, I think it might have even been less than that, he had his old job back. Which, if you'll recall, Bannon was at one point the CEO of Breitbart. And I'm not exactly sure what position he'll have there, but he's going back to Breitbart. And it is absolutely no surprise. And this, by the way, shows exactly why his time was up. Because you had a guy who... And I'll get into what value he brought to Trump here a little later. But you had a guy who came from the media business. Breitbart, as you know, is an online news site. They're very popular. I think it's wholly unfair to lump it in with some sort of alt-right, you know, crazy, you know, white supremacist group. I mean, Breitbart is a mainstream site. They have a lot of impressions. An enormous amount of people go to that site every day. They're very influential with the conservative right. And they, if they're alternative to anything, I would say they're an exact alternative to, let's say, the National Review, for example, which I would describe now as being more of a establishment Republican publication, even though once upon a time it was an upstart itself. And I only bring all this into play here. It's only important because when Bannon went to the White House and he was working as Trump's chief strategist, what did he do? One thing he didn't do, and no one's really talking about this, one thing he didn't do is cut ties fully with Breitbart. And it's obvious now because look at it, 3 hours later, bam, he's back in his old gig. I don't think they even cleared out his desk over there. I think when you work for the White House, I mean, even when you work for any employer, it's very difficult to be all in for someone when you still have a foot in the door somewhere else. This is like relationships. If you're still texting your ex, you probably shouldn't be getting married to your current girlfriend. You're not all in. And when you're working for none other than the President of the United States, you have got to be his and only his. And it's important, especially because if you still have links to your old media buddies, I don't care how great. I like Breitbart. I like their journalism. I think some of their people are top shelf. But if you still have a foot in the door over at a major media outlet, what are you going to do? You're going to tell them stuff. And now for weeks and weeks, there are these stories that have been going around about McMaster and about General Kelly that have been these kind of these very shrill, antagonistic stories about how the Trump administration is being taken over by a bunch of, you know, establishment GOP hacks, that the Trump presidency has been, that there is basically a coup underway. And where do you think this was all being sourced from? Where, who was spilling the beans or telling Breitbart, telling all these Breitbart reporters that were leading, I mean, every day on Breitbart, that's all you would see. It had to be coming from Bannon. And if it wasn't, why didn't Bannon tell them to cut it out? Surely he had some influence. If I were Trump, I would say, look, right now, there's no such thing as a good leak. There's no such thing as that. Now, sure, I know sometimes you send things out and you will push something out there kind of through the back door in an effort to get something caught. But there's none of this stuff that was coming out about Trump and the palace intrigue is helpful. What's Trump's message got to be right now? It's got to be the ship is sailing forward. We're pointed in the right direction. Everybody is working in harmony and in concert to achieve a common goal and purpose. The entire messaging has got to be oars in the water. So you don't want one of your key people, your chief strategist, to be phoning home and saying, hey, psh, by the way, got stuff going. You know, this is what's going on. This guy, you know, he was basically waging war against his internal opponents inside the White House instead of working to the benefit of the president. So that is one hugely important thing. Now, the other part of this, one way you knew that Bannon's time was up too is there's a piece that came out today, this morning, by Roger Stone. Now, if you don't know who Roger Stone is, Roger Stone is an incredibly interesting man. He's been a political operative for years and years. I met him at the Republican convention. I think every day at the convention, he's wearing a seersucker suit. He has rounder glasses than I do. He's got a ring, a pinky ring. Not a pinky ring, but he's got this ring with the skull on it. And he's got a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back, which I did not see. I said not see. I didn't say Nazi. Just clear that up. But Roger Stone is someone who has worked on and off for Trump and who is a very conservative kind of fire-breathing rabble-rouser. Okay, he's an older guy, but very, very, very smart. And somebody that I would say represents the more revolutionary wing of Trump supporters. He's somebody who favors disrupting the GOP status quo. And Roger wrote a piece and he said, look, you know, Bannon's time is up. That was the title of the piece. But he made a very interesting point, which I have to give him credit for, which is that Bannon let the movement down. If you're thinking about where did Trump get his support? And forget what the media is saying about Nazis and white supremacists and all this. This is hogwash. Trump got a lot of support from people who wanted change. They felt sold out by many people who voted for Obama were voting for Trump. And it was because they wanted to disrupt the political class of America. And the feeling is, doesn't matter if you vote for a Democrat, doesn't matter if you vote for a Republican, doesn't matter who you vote for, really, because they're all the same people. You've got all that deep state bureaucracy where nothing really changed. And people wanted a disruptor. Which is why, in my opinion, they overlooked people. A lot of voters overlooked everything. So now, to bring context to Bannon's firing, because that's what we're talking about. And I'll tell you why it's important. It's important because everyone from Ann Coulter on down is in hysterics over this. There's a lot of prominent figures on the right, prominent Trump supporters. I'll put it that way. Prominent Trump supporters, longtime Trump supporters, are in a full-scale meltdown over this. They're calling this the end of the Trump presidency, an effective coup. I saw someone, who was it? I said somebody was. Is there any difference between literally removing the president and removing all the people that support him? I mean, is there any difference? Because the way they see this is that Bannon is the last of the Mohicans. He's the last guy that was there, that was part of the original group. He's the one who's sort of the called the architect of the populist message. But Trump has a point from that now infamous press conference where he said Steve came on late. If you think that Bannon's removal somehow now is going to turn Trump into a moderate person who goes around apologizing for everything he does, you're wrong. I mean, Trump was saying Trump things and very conservative, non-politically correct, direct messages and ideas long before Bannon ever showed up on the scene. These ideas are Trump's, not Bannon's. So to Ann Coulter and the rest of the right, and you may be a Trump supporter, so I'm saying this because I don't want you to sit there and despair. And if you're not a Trump supporter, I don't want you to sit and celebrate and go, you know, well thank goodness. I mean, now the adults in the room are going to take over, because that's the thing that I'm hearing a lot of today too. No, Trump is his own guy, and he needs to trust his instincts. And his instincts, I think they're saying Trump fired him himself. I believe that Trump very much wanted Bannon gone, that this is not just a General Kelly move. And it's because Trump feels betrayed. And I would, too. Most normal people would. You cannot serve two masters. And with a mission as critical as getting this new, very fragile administration up off the ground, you cannot have a guy that is inside, who's picking fights with people, and who's, well, I mean, at any rate, feeding, you know, leaking damaging information back to his old magazine, to his own news site. Can't do it. Well, there's one thing, yeah, you got to watch for one thing about when we look at this Bannon story and how it will unfold in the next few days and weeks, and maybe even months. Right now, we're all being told that Breitbart is alt-right. Correct? I mean, that's that Breitbart and you know, it's not. You've got the big alt-rights. It's like that 4chan is a big alt-right place. What else? There's a couple others. But at any rate, it'll be very interesting. And we're told, of course, that Trump supporters, they're all alt-right, and they're all a bunch of, you know, fascists and Nazis and skinheads. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens when Breitbart begins attacking Trump. I don't, you know, and again, I think the only person that can erode support for himself is Trump. Trump is the only person that has the power to erode the bond that he has with his voters. And it's a powerful bond because he speaks to them directly. Unlike any president I have seen in my lifetime. He's embraced new media. He's figured it out. Everybody's telling him to be quiet, not to be himself, and he's still doing it. He's getting a lot of guff for it. But remember, he is speaking in a way where people are harmonizing with it because it's real. People forgive a lot when it's real. So I think behind the scenes, though, Trump is the kind of guy that needs a disciplined organization. He needs to have order in the back office. Kelly, General Kelly, the new chief of staff, is bringing that order. And Bannon was a disruptor of that order. Now, you can't disrupt the system and at the same time be disrupting your own shop. If you're going to achieve an agenda, you, for heaven's sakes, you've got to get your crap together. No? I don't know what it's almost interesting. If you want to start, you know, if you want to start a revolution, your revolutionaries, ironically enough, have got to be disciplined and have to be held to heel. You don't get anything done, especially not when you're up against this behemoth of a deep state organization. You don't get anything done by fighting the system. But the other, without having an organized system to fight everything and get everything done. Now, the last point here, I'll get to it after the break. Roger Stone made a really important point in his piece that deals with something that Bannon failed to do. that actually puts, you know, the Trump presidency at risk. And it is an interesting thing. So when we come back, I want to get to this, because there's a critical failing, something that Bannon in his position should have advocated for and should have pushed for. But it was, in fact, his own ideology, maybe, that got in the way for him, getting it done. It's very interesting. One thing that may prove to be a critical chink in the armor, if you will, a crack that that will now have to be filled, and may not be filled, in fact. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio.
790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Happy Friday evening again. I'm glad. Look, we're almost there. The weekend is coming. It'll be here before we know it. I hope you're driving home or already home safe and sound and ready to get your relaxation on. I will tell you here about this Steve Bannon news that he is out and back in his new job at Breitbart. Not a very surprising development given the events of the week and the week prior. But I think there was this piece here by Roger Stone. I was telling you about it just a little bit earlier. And Stone cites an interesting failing that speaks to the value that Bannon brought. I mentioned that because I wanted to get to his value. So on one hand, Bannon was a guy, is phenomenally, I would assume, a phenomenal organizer. I mean, if you're the CEO of Breitbart, you're somebody that is organizing this upstart media group, you know how to get stuff done, right? You're the kind of person, by the way, and he's background in Goldman Sachs. He's a banker. He's a really smart guy, Ivy League educated, and just kind of a pistol. I mean, this guy has a lot of energy. He's whip smart. But maybe a little too full of himself. But at any rate, he is someone who understood the need of speaking to common Americans and kept Trump on that message in the critical stages of the campaign. Remember before he came on? Remember kind of where the Trump campaign was? I mean, it was speaking of a ship and that metaphor that I used last segment, the ship was sinking. It was not good. Trump was off message. Paul Manafort became a distraction and just sort of a low energy, inside the Beltway guy. And Bannon came in and really reminded Trump. The messaging was Trump's, but he just reminded Trump to stay on his core message. And it worked. And it worked. The problem is, according to Stone, who has some inside knowledge, given that he had worked in the Trump campaign and is a friend of Trump's, and is a huge Trump supporter. Stone says, look, one of the problems is once they got in, Bannon was supposed to make sure that Trump loyalists got in to the administration. That Trump loyalists got in the cabinet, that they got key positions. And for whatever reason, there's one thought here that maybe it's called patronage. I mean, That's the insider term for it. You know, the president gets elected. There's people on the campaign that didn't get paid. You know, they're volunteers, or if they got paid, it's like nothing. So what happens? They get patronage. They get jobs inside the White House. And those jobs don't necessarily pay huge money, but they pay. And they're enormously prestigious. That makes sense, right? And maybe it was because Bannon is a guy whose own ideology, part of his ideology may have gotten in his own way. I mean, he's kind of this libertarian guy. He doesn't believe in giving away favors of the government. That's his way of thinking. But he was not effective at all at getting core campaign loyalists in. So it is an interesting theory. When you look through the list and you look at, for example, I mean, if you look at Rex Tillerson, I mean, he was somebody who was widely supported by Condoleezza Rice, who's very much an establishment GOP figure. And you're seeing now today news out of the State Department. I don't know if you missed this, but the State Department made a huge announcement, which was that the State Department is now placing a new emphasis on minority hiring and promoting minorities and women into top positions. The world is on fire, and we're dealing with minorities? Is that really the focus right now? Do I really want the State Department to be more politically correct? It's a problem. And it actually makes Stone's criticism of a piece that was written before this type of news broke all that much more prescient. All right, it's something I want to talk about. Now, when we come back, I will have advice for the Democratic Party. I do this from time to time. You don't want to miss this because the Democrats might be getting a little lost themselves. And you may think it's really bad for Trump right now, but it's not as bad as you think. And it's worse for some of the messaging on the other side. Don't go anywhere. We got John Wolfe up next with the news, and Sam Nation will be back after that.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC, live from the Sweet James Studios, deep behind the orange curtain, Friday night, bottom of the hour, plowing through. 1-800-222-5222 is the phone number, and my email is always sam@samnation.com. Look, I'm going to be honest. I'm always honest, but I'm just going to be more honest. Painting Trump and his supporters as a bunch of racist nut jobs is a absolutely losing argument for the left. It's a losing argument for the Democratic Party. And it's a losing argument and strategy for any candidate who runs for political office. We are living through not, I think, as some people call this, a second civil war or whatnot, but let's tone it down a little bit. What we have here is Basket of Deplorables 2.0. And I would argue that when Hillary Clinton let that slip, you know, when she admitted her disdain, probably the disdain of the entire Democratic Party and even some in the Republican Party, their disdain for people who had been marginalized and left behind in the Bush-Obama economies. I think that was the pivotal moment that tipped the election in Trump's favor, of course. I'm going to give you some numbers. I mentioned last night there's 62 million Trump voters, people that voted for Trump. 62 million people. When you have prominent Democrats and prominent pundits saying things like anyone that has voted for Trump is a racist and is a Nazi, these are things that are being said openly. When you have like the state senator in Missouri, Democratic Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal, saying she hopes the president is killed. This is nuts. I mentioned this Trump derangement syndrome. And by the way, along those same lines, it's affecting everybody. It's affecting people on the right, people on the left. It's affecting politicians. It's affecting journalists. Where people who normally would think things through a little bit better and would be a more measured in both their thinking and certainly in their expression of thought are saying insane things because they're so riled up by Trump. They've painted a caricature out of him. And I'm not going to beat to death this press conference any longer, but if the guy said what you thought he said, I would be with you. But it's not, and I've taken it apart over and over and over again. Calling violence wrong from no matter who perpetrates it against whom is correct. It's absolutely the truth. So pushing this enormous backlash against Trump could really backfire. Listen to me, Democrats. You gotta understand this, because what happens when quite a few of these 62 million people are listening to you, and they're all over Facebook, they're all over Twitter, and that's just a small percentage of them. There are many of them who are quietly sitting at home, who voted for Trump because it was about the economy. It was that damned economy that Obama could not get his hands around because he was too busy punishing the rich, lecturing business owners like I am about, you didn't build that, it was the government's help too. Screw you. It's like, I mean, inspired no business confidence. Employers were afraid to hire. People voted for Trump because of things like that. And for you to turn around and paint Trump up with this, you know, broad racist brush, it works, it sells for ratings. It might make for clever sound bites, but it is not a strategy that will win at all, because you're marginalizing the very people that you need to win back. It's crazy. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Back after this.
Talk Radio.
KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here. If you get into an accident, if you are hurt and don't know what to do, I will tell you exactly what you need to do. It's so easy. You call attorney Sweet James Bergner, because the very first thing you want to make sure you do, you want to have the right information. And if there is something that you need to do, if there is somebody that you need to set straight, you want to make sure you've got the right guy in your corner. Am I correct? Of course. So look, even if you, maybe you've already got a lawyer. Maybe your lawyer, isn't calling you back and is being a jerk. Or not very good at all. You can switch. Get a new lawyer. Sweet James Bergner. Give him a call. And of course, you don't worry about the old lawyer. You can trust James that he'll do the breakup for you. So anyway, 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right. Sam Rogowski here, back behind the Sam Nation microphone. I saw a tweet from a listener who can't believe his ears of what he's hearing here on KBC Radio, that Sam Nation is not a fan of women and minorities working at the State Department. Okay, probably listening for the first time. Your gender and your race are not job qualifications. That's my only point. Your integrity, your skill, your education, your competence, those are bona fide job qualifications. You know, I don't, that's my only point. We want the best and the brightest. I don't care if that means that they're all women and all minorities. But the fact of the matter is that we have to still, that we're obsessing about this, this gender qualification and this diversity qualifications. It's just, it's nonsense. And I talk about it often here. So forgive my shorthand earlier if I was unclear, but, this is a really important issue to me. And I think that if we can move on and become the country that we dream of becoming, we really are not going to be looking at our differences. We're just going to be looking at the qualifications that matter. All right. Now, the other thing that's going on here is this characterization. All Trump supporters are racist thugs, and it's just as I was explaining earlier. It's going to backfire. And it backfires because in these millions and millions and millions of Trump voters, many of whom are under the radar, don't talk about it, are out of sight and out of, most importantly, out of reach of various pollsters, right? People are complaining about Trump's approval rating hovering somewhere between 35 and 42%, which was his approval rating, 2 months before the election? So, there's a broad swath of Americans, forget Trump supporters, forget Republicans, forget Democrats, forget the labels, of Americans who voted for the guy, probably don't love everything about him. But do you know what the media is doing and what the Democratic Party is doing and all these talking points of painting everybody as a racist who voted for Trump? You know what it's doing? You are unwittingly driving away the very voters that you need to win back. You've got to get these people back. If you want the White House in 2020, I think you need to go after these. You need to go after these voters and not call them, a bunch of Klansmen. By the way, you know, when David Duke organized a conference for racists in 2005 in New Orleans, do you know how many people showed up? You have any idea? This wasn't just for the KKK. It was for it was supposed to be this, I don't know, Unite the Racists of America rally. I forget the exact name. Only 300 people showed up. Such a marginal group, this white nationalist deal. Such a marginal group. I'm telling you. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
Say, what is this? You know what it is.
790-790-790-790. KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. I received an email earlier today from a listener, Benjamin, in Hermosa Beach, and I actually wanted to respond to this on air because it's very good. It reminded me, of course, it's something that I had known before, that the ACLU had represented the KKK in a free speech case. And this is Brandenburg v. Ohio, which is a seminal case on free speech. Basically, the deal was there was a state that tried to say, look, we can't have the Klan out there protesting because it's going to incite violence. And the ACLU, guys, this is, synonymous. Let's see. I don't know. If you're a right winger, and I say ACLU, what do you get? You get a little nervous tick. It's a liberal group, okay? And to my point that I've been making on again off this week, free speech protects hate speech. We cannot turn this country. We cannot. The First Amendment is here to stay. And thank goodness. The same is true with the Snyder v. Phelps case. You remember the Westboro Baptist Church, they protest the terrible, horrible things that they yell at the funerals of slain servicemen. They can't, the state can't bar them. It's speech. It's free speech. So, Benjamin, I appreciate you reminding me of this and thank you. Benjamin thinks I'm the voice of reason. So so I accept that because Benjamin seems to be a very intelligent, person. And glad to have you as a listener and acolyte of the show. All right. As part of this speech, remember I mentioned how they're protecting that statue. Now there's that Lenin statue in Seattle. And the reason that the Lenin statue in Seattle is important is because we're taking down all these Confederate monuments everywhere. And the neighborhood that had the Lenin statue up, the Fremont neighborhood, posted on its website, look, art is supposed to make you feel, not just feel good. Lenin, of course, being a violent mass murderer and the founder, the paterfamilias of communism, probably the single most destructive ism of the 20th century. Well, that statue, apparently, I've heard, is coming down, which I don't know what they're... Poor Seattle, I don't know. They're losing their Lenin statue. There must be a tremendous loss of identity that comes with that. But this is a broader point I want to make, as I saw a number of people that I know, and in some cases even respect, arguing on the radio, online, and on TV about how this statue ought to come down, you know, tit for tat, and they're holding protests out there. You've got to have a consistency of positions. It's very important. And a position I had, I'm actually sad the statue's coming down because, look, keep it up there. I'll tell you, if I visited that neighborhood with my son, my son is 9 and he's going to be 10 soon, and we walk by that statue, it would give me an opportunity to stand next to him and explain to him who Lenin was, how he affected my family, how literally the Lenin's life work nearly destroyed my family. I could tell my son all these things. And it's a missed opportunity when these fragments of history are removed. And that's, I'll talk more next week here about these statues. I think this is there's an interesting culture war that's afoot. And it's a little bit more than just civil war, racism, and Confederacy. All right, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, we're out of time. Have a great weekend and talk to you on Monday.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.